What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, Ben. That's me. I survived the hike.
You did.
I'm here. I'm alive. It was a good old-fashioned GMA adventure.
It truly was in its most honest form all the way across. So if you've been listening to the last several episodes of The Pop, you know that Jay and I have been preparing to summit the Linville Gorge.
Oh, that. I mean, we did many summits atop the Linville Gorge.
We did. I have to tell you. So, yeah, the past weekend, I think the final take ended up being two nights, 29 miles, and what was the elevation change gain?
14,000.
Okay,
total elevation change. Yeah.
So, yeah. Lots of ups, downs, all arounds. I have to tell you that this hike in particular, I just think is like. It's aggressive. It's difficult and hard. And it's like at every opportunity, it's like, hey, you know what would be really fun is instead of just going from like this peak to the next peak where they're kind of like the same height, is go from this peak all the way down to the bottom. And then we'll go all the way to the top peak again. And then we'll go all the way down again.
You can see this same view from like a different vantage point.
Although I will say that is so true. It's like whenever you like driving or flying in somewhere and you can like see just like various mountain peaks, you know, there's always or even if you're going to like draw mountains, you know, you would start by going up and making like a triangle, and then you would come down a little bit, and then you make like the next smaller triangle, and you come down a little bit,
yeah,
and you make a tall triangle, and so on. It's like in the practical application of going from each of the tops of those triangles like to each other, it's like. You don't realize the fact that you have to go further down than like, you know, the top of the next lowest one. So yeah, it was just like going up and down and up and down and up and down was wild. But it was also unbelievable to me how at the top of each mountain, there actually was like a very distinctly different kind of view,
yeah,
available. So it was kind of like each one was like, you know, remarkably nicer than the one before.
I mean, every single view was absolutely breathtaking, and they were almost like nonstop. It felt like you turn a corner to be like, oh man, here's an overlook. And then you get to the top of the thing, and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe everything I'm seeing. And then it's like, wow, look at this big structure. And then, just tons. I mean, we were at the top of one of them called Hawksbill that was like if you were standing on the top of it, you could literally spin in 360 degrees and see a view in literally every direction. And to say that you could see like any man-made structures at all was like you could not.
Yeah.
You know, it was like you were completely surrounded by like at least 3 miles of nature in like every direction.
I have to imagine it's a similar feeling like if you've ever been to like the Grand Canyon, which I have not, but I would say that on top of that mountain peak was the most amount of land I think I've ever visibly been able to see with the naked eye at once.
Right.
Like it was incredible just how massive everything seemed. Like you can even go and sit at the beach and be staring out in like a completely uninterrupted view, but like it's and chances are, like, you know, you're seeing at that point in time as much land as humanly possible. It's just all underwater,
right,
so to speak. So it doesn't seem like as much to like visibly take in, but this, it was almost like it was commanding how much of the world I was seeing at once. And it almost made me literally feel like I needed to like bend down and like hold on to like the ledge of the rock, even though I was like 30 feet in any direction,
yeah, from the edge. Yeah.
It was like, I feel like I'm going to fall off the earth. You know, like if I don't step properly, like I might like literally just fall into the air,
right,
somehow or something. It was odd how I felt like ungrounded by how massive everything around me seemed.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I thought that was a very cool kind of like in new nature-based experience for me.
Yeah.
How did you feel? So, like, I know that as we've discussed this, like, you know, like the trip pending and everything, and the fact that we were doing it again after, the rest of us had done it like a couple of years ago. I remember your commentary on it was like, I'm surprised you even want to do it again.
Yeah.
Because the last time you guys went, it seemed like everybody got home and was like, well, we're not doing that again. Too hard.
Yeah.
Did we properly hype it for you? Like what was your experience?
I mean, it was properly difficult. There's no way around it. Like, it is a really hard hike, just all around. And what really surprised me about it was that, like, the number of different ways in which it continued to be difficult in new and unexpected ways.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yep.
Like, when you say you're going on a hike, like, the number one deterrent that you assume is going to make the hike difficult is walking uphill. Yep. Like, as far as almost every hike I've ever been on, that's basically what makes it quote unquote hard. But it's also sort of like the point of hiking. So it's always sort of been like, well, yeah, I mean, walking uphill is hard, but that's what hiking is. So, like, if you've already committed to going, like, that's not really much of anything to complain about.
Right.
You know, yeah. Like, yeah. Sure, some hills will be steeper, some will be longer, but more or less, like, I was prepared for, like, yeah, uphill, hard, and you guys were describing it so aggressively. I was like, this is going to be probably steep uphill for lengthy time. And certainly that existed.
Yes.
Like, there are plenty of spots where you're like, yep, this is just going and going and going and going and going. But you do get to the top eventually, which is fine. What surprised me was the ways in which it felt like the trail, it was able to attack you in ways that were not simply uphill.
Yeah.
Namely, like, I don't know, downhill.
That, dude, I think this is a highly underestimated aspect, yeah, of backpacking, probably in particular.
Yeah.
Which is that, like, when it is steep and you have a sustained downhill and you have, you know, 30 pounds of pack on your back, it means that every step you take, your, like, the fronts of your, like, quads, you know, yeah, like the big muscles above your knee on the fronts, it's like they're having to, like, stabilize all of your weight to prevent you from, like, falling down the hill.
Yeah.
And yeah, when you have, like, a 1 mile aggressive downhill, it can almost be more painful than the aggressive 1 mile uphill that brought you there in the first place.
Yeah. And it's such a weird thing, because you think downhill, that's going to be the easy part. And, like, you think it's going to be at, like, a certain amount of reprieve, and it's not. And so you're right, in some ways, like, more painful, but pain in, like, a different way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I wouldn't say, like, going uphill is painful. I would say going uphill is tiring.
Yeah.
Like, going downhill is, yeah, physically painful. Like, you are hurting, not because your muscles are tired,
yeah,
but because, like, your, like, joints are, like, slamming into the ground, or your feet are, like, up against just really uncomfortable surfaces over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. Rocks, roots.
Unstable land and stuff like that. So there was that. There was, like, also then we had this big section of trail on the second day. Well, there was a big section of trail one day that was, like, pure GMA, like, throwback. It was just straight up waterfalling. You know, it was just hopping rocks on the river, get from here to there. That was super fun, although a little trickier because we had the big backpacks on.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, the idea of jumping, like, a 3 foot, 4 foot gap with your pack on is, yeah, way different than how it might be if you're just out there, like, scampering around on the rocks having yourself, yeah, a good old time.
Oh my gosh, it made me feel, like, so old at certain points.
I agree with that.
Yep. There would be parts, like, where, like, when we were kids, it'd be like, oh yeah, or not kids, like teenagers, like, where we'd be out there waterfalling and it'd be like, okay, I need to get from this boulder to that little spot down there, and it's just like, and jump and land, boom, next. And well, it was,
yeah,
like,
yeah, let me back up just a tiny bit, yeah, to define waterfalling in case it's, like, less, sure, obvious to someone who hasn't heard us tell all the GMA tales before. But there was this one, like, river system in Roanoke where we would, like, go, like, on no path other than just the river itself, and used all of the available rocks to travel our way down the river to get to, like, a waterfall that you could just, like, then look at.
Right.
There is a very easy walking trail to this exact same waterfall that we could have always taken, and instead we would always go on the rocks. And frequently, yeah, this meant, like, you were, you know, the rocks aren't set in place so that you are able to do this. So,
right,
at times,
you gotta get creative.
Right. At times, as kids, I mean, we would literally be, like, running, leaping from one rock and, like, in the air for 8 to 10 feet, hoping we would land on the other side.
Right.
You know, it was like, we're, I mean, functionally doing like a long jump like you might do at like a track and field.
Yeah, exactly.
Except not into sand, not in a controlled environment, and where if you fall, it's probably going to be into potentially really cold, fast-moving water.
Right, yeah. So this was our game. The game was don't fall in the water, basically. Yeah. Get from the top of the river to the bottom and don't fall in, which more or less we normally did. But so there was a big section of the hike, not like a big section, but like a section where we were having to do effectively waterfall. And it was so, it felt so different, like one with the pack on, because it just made like the act of like doing a broad jump so much harder, because like, you know, you had to then carry the weight and your landing balance was so askew. But even just like doing like a 2 foot jump down from something under even what looked like a pretty flat, stable rock would be like, oh boy, that is going to, it's really going to hurt my knees if I do that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, granted, we've been walking like downhill for hours at that point. And of course you have the backpack on. So like you're landing with like the extra like 20 to 30 pounds of weight as well. But like, even that was just like, man, the fact that I'm like really sitting here double thinking this like 1 foot jump is like, I feel so much, older than I used to.
I feel like it really culminated on, same day, second day where we were out there and doing this. And I think we had probably like 5 miles left to finish our day out. And we all stopped and had like an Advil break on the trail.
Oh yeah.
Where it was, mm-hmm.
The Advil break.
The Advil break. Like, so Mike actually has like a fanny pack on with Advil, like within like, you know, immediate zipper reach. It's like zip. Who wants one? And so at one point in time, yeah, we all stopped and took Advil, which I think probably if the pain was at like, 87%, it probably brought me back down to like 63.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the amount of available dent.
Right.
To be put into, the current aches and pains going through us.
Helpful though. Yeah. So we had uphill, we had downhill, we had boulder jumping. We had probably a 2 or 3 mile section of just like, what was clearly a marked trail and that the trees were off the path and that like you could see the trail, but it was like nothing but rocks and roots for over 2 miles, if not further, where like every single step involved you like thinking about exactly where you were going to place your foot so as to not roll an ankle or slide off a rock. And no matter where you placed your foot, you were stepping on something very hard and irregular, which pressed into the bottom of your foot in some uncomfortable way.
The thing it reminded me the most of as we were doing it, because like, what would really surprise me is that like as fatigued as I was at the end of each day, the thing that was hurting me the most was my feet.
Yeah.
It was just like, man, like I am like, what I really wanted was like a tennis ball that I could just like stand on and just like roll back and forth. But it reminded me of, if you've ever worked like a trade show, like on a conference center floor, mm-hmm. which is usually just like a big span of like concrete. If you get to the end of the, an 8 hour day where you've done nothing but stand on concrete, like your whole body feels like you were hit with like a Mack truck.
Right.
And it's like, this is like that, except not like the floor, the concrete wasn't even flat.
Right.
Like in this case, it was like, it was a rock. It was a root. It may have involved like a 2 to 3 foot, like step up, that you had to do. So it was it was like, oh my goodness. And you had the pack again on your back, just adding like an extra 30 pounds of downforce into all of these particular things. So.
Yeah. And so it's like, I wouldn't have thought just like rugged terrain. Like I would have thought like, oh yeah, hiking. Like everything is rugged terrain when you're hiking, but this was like, no, this is rugged terrain.
Yeah.
Like you are, I wouldn't have even considered that to be like, that'll eventually just get like, it'll like beat me up after a while. I was like, no, it did. So I'd never experienced that before. Even when we got like, we finally got past that and there was like a nice long section of just like actually open flat trail that was just like there, you didn't have to worry about anything. You could just go.
Yeah.
Which that was nice. But even then it was like when we got to that exact spot, this probably was just like a timing thing, but it was like we were then racing the sun down.
Right.
Because like even when we finally got to what was otherwise like effectively easy trail. I was like, well, it is easy, but we do needs to be moving.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to set up in the dark.
Yeah. You don't want to set up in the dark or anything. So it was like, all right, and go. So that was also, we had to move there. And then like we had to do a river crossing at one point where it's like, you couldn't just rock jump. You just had to like walk through the river. And that really wasn't that bad. It could have been a lot worse if the water was deeper. But what it was real cold.
I thought this was a particularly interesting one. Yeah. Because like it was, it was a couple of things. One is that I think you and I both became like croc.
Converts
over the weekend.
Yeah.
So a couple of years ago when I went, I had like a pair of like Chaco sandals, which are, if you've ever had them before, I mean, you can almost hike in them on their own. They're like a hiking boot sole with like straps on top. So they're really great, but they're also quite heavy because they're made for, you know, that environment. And so this go around, I took a cue from our good buddy Steven from our last trip, who had just brought Crocs, and they're just so ridiculously lightweight that when you get to the end of your day and you get to camp and you're able to like take your boots off and just put them into anything else that's more comfortable, we put our feet into Crocs and it was like, oh,
so much better.
This, and I was like, man, I don't know. Like Crocs, it's interesting because I know that they're currently from like a fashion standpoint, like air quotes in. And it's odd because like, I remember when Crocs first came out and they were super popular and then they sort of became like considered the mark of someone who has absolutely like zero fashion sense. And then they just came like rocketing back up.
Crocketing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
They crocketed back up. And I think the thing two things I was gobsmacked about. First is that like when I was going to order mine, like on Amazon, was that like the reviews were unlike anything I'd ever seen before. There's like, they have 5 stars with 340,000 reviews.
That is insane numbers on the number. Cause like when you leave a review, typically it's because you were impressed with the product or you were unimpressed with the product.
Right. And, but like I would even go so far as to say that like there are so many products that are good that just like people don't think to go and review because maybe it just sort of like meets expectations. Like Bounty paper towels, for example, might be like a great paper towel. And if you go on Amazon, sure enough, it will have like 5-star reviews. And I'm sure that millions of people have bought them, but like it probably only has like 10,000 5-star reviews, which is still a lot. But like for it to have 340,000, to me, I'm like, people must be shocked.
Croc shocked. Yeah.
Yeah. Crocked.
Crocked.
Like they put them on like to where they're like, I have to go tell people.
I got it. We're doing it right now.
It's
happening.
I know. Our worlds have been crocked.
Our worlds have been totally crocked. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. Like ever since, I don't know when Crocs first came out. I feel like it was like right, towards the end of my high school career. Maybe.
Yeah, I keep trying to think of like what the marker in my mind would be.
Yeah, I don't know, but I've like forever sat on the side of, I don't care what the reviews are. They are so hideous as to nothing could justify them. End of sentence.
That's the thing too, though, is that it's like, I think that I have been taught, because I feel like when they first came out, I thought they were cool. And then it was almost like they became cargo shorts, or even Alice and I were talking about this over the weekend because she's had a bunch of guys coming in for like homecoming for like tuxedos and stuff like that. And she's like, I can't tell you the number of them that have mullets. And I'm like, you know, cause it's just back. Like they're just in again. And I'm like, man, like it's so, I can't understand it, but also I'm sure I'm wrong. You know, it's like, all I know is what I've been taught about this particular thing. And what I've been taught is that it's not cool, but also it's like, I'm clearly seeing now that like plenty of cool people are doing it. And it's like, well, You know?
Well. Yeah, you're right. There's going to be like an entire generation of people who look back at their photos and their kids are going to be like, I'm sorry, Dad, do you have on tall white socks, Crocs, and a mullet in this picture? And they'll be like, it was a, yeah, of course I do, son.
Like, and I was wearing it well.
Yeah.
Like people thought I was cool. Yeah.
First of all, you don't even know. You don't even know.
I wonder if this is the most frustrating thing, like, about aging in any capacity.
Yeah.
It's just literally the fact that, like, once you have lived long enough for the cycles to have gone through at least twice, it's like now whenever you like witness other people who are still in the like their experience of the first cycle, it's like you're explaining to me that Crocs are cool again. I'm explaining to you that this has already happened once before.
Right.
And like, you are not aware of the fact that 3 years from now, they will be out again.
Be prepared. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I suppose it's just basic wisdom. You know, I wonder at what point in time, like, part of the wisdom is also just like the knowledge that it's not worth condescending the person by explaining it to them.
Yeah. Right.
It's just sort of like, oh, you'll see. Like you'll see.
There's there's no explaining it to some people. There's no, like, this is the thing about wisdom, is that like it can no matter how much wisdom you can pass on verbally, it can often only be gained through experience. So this is the frustrating half of wisdom, is that, like, you already know the answers. If you would just listen to me, you'd be great. But you won't, and then you'll know.
It's so true. It's like, yeah, like you can hear like all the old adages and stuff like that, and it's like, oh, I get it. I know why this is a thing now.
Mm.
Until you experience it for yourself, you just don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, we got Crocs
we did our river crossing in our Crocs. Probably one of the coolest moments of my life. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just like, man, I'm in the middle of the wilderness. I'm wearing Crocs right now. My feet are frozen to the bottom of the river.
Oh my gosh. You and John and Mike, just like, you guys got in the water and you're like, oh, it's cold. And then you just proceeded onward. No problem at all. I was so impressed, because when I stepped in the water, I was like, oh my God, it's cold. And then I took two more steps and I was like, it is so cold. I took like one more step. I was like, it's so cold, I can't move. And then I was having this like giant like cycle of problems in my head. And I'm like, I can't move. And I'm like, what if I don't move? It's going to get colder. And the longer you think about it, the colder it's getting. You have got to hold it. Jonathan, you got to move, man. You got to move, because it is freezing.
Yes,
like,
yes.
It's like, but I can't, because it's so cold. Like, I can't even tell. Like, it's, you don't think about cold this way, you know? And I've experienced it like two or three times in my life where like, you are so cold. Like, that's it. Like, all thought has left your body.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I don't know if my feet are just more sensitive than you guys. That must be the case, because I stepped in there and I was like literally frozen in like, I can't move. And like, I had to like force of will my legs forward and like get to a rock and like just wait like 20 seconds for my feet to get all the blood to rush back into it. And then be like, okay, where's the next rock? And I would like go as fast as I could to the next one and have to like wait for the whole process to go over again. Cause I was dying in the river.
I genuinely think, cause like, I think that it was like an ignorance is bliss thing for me in particular. Like, I think if you had gone first and I was watching you have the struggle and I realized that that was something like to have, then I do think I would have been like, oh no, you know, but like, cause I even think after the fact, once we got across and you started like telling me about your experience, I was like, it was really cold. Like, you know, I was almost like, huh, what was I just like recklessly just like,
y'all were just going, man.
Like, just straight up, like hoofing it through. So I almost actually feel like if I were to go back and do it again, I would do worse.
Mm.
Like, I think it was beginner's luck a little bit, where it was just kind of like, okay, like we'll just cross the river. It'll be fine. I'll get to the other side.
Yeah. That's what I thought it was going to be like.
Yeah, well, there you go. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. But I'll tell you, the water was cold, and that was just yet another unexpected, like, ooh, boy, I didn't see that coming. Kind of challenge on the hike that particular day.
That's true.
But at least I have my Crocs on. Unlike John, who just did it completely barefoot.
Well, you know, it occurred to me this morning, like Ethan, the podcast editor, has known us since he had met our younger brother in like sixth grade. So it's been like a long time. Like, mm-hmm. He's actually like attended like family vacations and stuff like that with us.
Yeah.
So we've known him for such a long period of time. And it has occurred to me that we have talked about GMA member John on so many occasions, and this had never even crossed my mind it could be impossible, But Ethan, this morning we walked in, we were talking about the hike and stuff. He was like, man, I've got to meet this guy. And I was like, you've never met John?
Unbelievable.
And it, like, I had like the glass shattering moment where I was like, I am so sure that based on everything we've ever told you, you do not have any idea like who John is actually like, because we've told all these stories about these wild antics and stuff that he's brought us on, but he's also probably like one of the most responsible people that I know.
Yeah, right.
Like he's just like like just incredibly smart and caring and nice and like thoughtful and like all the like the rest of the stuff. Just when we go on adventures, we push it.
This is the thing about, like, this went through my brain like a lot on this particular trip. It's like every trip we get, like, this always seems to be the theme of like a GMA trip, is that it sort of always has to be like the next hardest thing you ever did.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was just like, some people just go on hikes. Some people would just pick a hike
that's like meant to be just fun.
They'd be like, you want to go camping this weekend? Well, like, I know like a cool trail. It's like 3 miles in. We'll set up camp. We'll have fun. There's like a 5 mile hike out. It'll be, you know, like there are probably 1,000 hike, you know, so many hikes out there would just be like, yeah, we're just out in the woods. We're having fun. We went to the top of that mountain. Now we're camping. Great time. It's just like that's just never how it is.
Yeah, no, I know. We even got to our campsite the first night, and I remember like as we sort of like ventured down there, it's like it's just the middle of the woods. So I say campsite. It's not like a like designated space. It's just a clearing in the forest. But there happened to be one like 30 yards past ours that a couple had already like set up their whole camp and stuff. And I remember looking down at their camp and being like, man, they've got like so much extra like equipment and stuff. And like their tent is bigger and it seems like they're cooking like a proper meal. And I'm like, man, how do they like do all this? Like, cause that's a ton of stuff to have gotten like out into the middle of nowhere. And so I'm just like, you know, flabbergasted by it. And then the next morning, as we're like packing up and like doing like our hike out, we were heading towards this like other peak, which meant that we actually had to go like back into, I wouldn't even call it civilization, a gravel parking lot.
Yeah.
Where it occurred to me, I was like, oh, so like these people are not being like, what they did was like not still also like kind of extreme. Like they drove out into this place, like out in the wilderness,
yeah,
parked in a gravel parking lot. They still hiked like 3.5 miles into the thicket,
woods.
Like, into the thicket, you know, where they still had to carry all of the, like their stuff. You
right.
know, like it's not like, you know, like where you like drive up to like a parking spot, you open up the back of your car, you pick up your 40-pound tent and you set it up 8 feet like away.
Yeah, away from the car.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. It's like, you know, this was still like a big thing that these people had to do. But I was like, and yet like they were still able to bring like numerous luxuries that like we absolutely right. could not carry, mm-mm. you know, in our packs or anything. And I was like, we could just be those people.
Right. They look like they're having fun.
That's the question. This is actually like the merits of accomplishment. It's such a funny and unusual thing, because I feel like a lot of like societally speaking, or like even your wife Beth right now is training for like a marathon, and it's like you're gonna go and in like endure like on purpose, you know, 26 miles of continuous running.
Yeah,
you know, because at the end of it, you get to be really proud of yourself.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, it's interesting to me that like this form of like if you were to just go and have like the most luxurious spa day of your life, like while it is incredibly enjoyable, do you get to the end of that day and be ridiculously proud of yourself for doing it?
Yeah.
You know, like, you know what I'm saying?
It's, I know,
like,
what you mean.
It's like, and yet one of these things causes like blisters and excruciating, you know, knee pain, mm-hmm. and like you probably needed to like, you know, like have a like a therapy, like a massage just to recover from it,
yeah,
type of whatever. The other one is just like, I am able to go and to a place where I'm able to like feel comfortable and good and cozy and taken care of, and
yeah,
like one of them is considered an accomplishment and the other one is considered like the product of accomplishment, maybe,
right?
You know, so I don't know, it's I thought about this a lot on the trip. I was like, it's fascinating to me that we as humans are so drawn to these types of activities.
Right. Like, it's like, it's just a question of like, what about it is like making the act of doing it fun for you? Like, you know, is it the act of like having accomplished something hard? Is it just the act of like, yeah, we're just out in nature for the weekend, you know, we're just getting away.
Right.
You know, like those other people at the other campsite, that's almost certainly what it was for them.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't like they came back. It's not like they're coming back and it's like, how was your weekend? It was insane. It was so hard, you know, like
right.
We did crazy. I mean, maybe they did the next day. I doubt it based on the amount of stuff they had.
Right. But yeah, that's true.
You know, like, it's like, what is the amount of fun? Like what? And like, I'm not even sure. I think for you and me, like it was very like almost like accomplishment. It is like accomplishment driven. It's like, now we've done it. We can say we did it.
Yeah.
You know, and it reminded me a lot of like, I don't know, like it kind of reminds me like how me and Beth sometimes are at like Disney World, where it's like every day at Disney World needs to be like, you need to have gotten the most amount of fun out of that day as possible.
Oh, sure. You know? Yeah. It's like you're there at rope drop. You've got your fast passes like carefully calibrated.
Right.
In order to like, you can do this and this, and then that will open up this, which will like get you to over here. And like, you know, you've mapped it. You've got reservations. You've got, you know, like all the,
right.
All the various things.
And it's like tiredness. Forget about it. Doesn't matter. You can sleep when you're dead. You're not going to be at Disney World for one day. Okay.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you take it into the absolute,
take
like
it to the max, man. We're not taking breaks, you know?
Well, you know, and this occurred to me a long time ago. I remember me and you went on a canoe trip, with a friend that we had made as we had like become professional adults out in the world and stuff like that. And I remember we, like, you and I got out there and I think we had to paddle something like 15 miles on the first day. And I feel like we got in the water and like hucked it.
Right.
You know, it was like, you go as hard as you can.
Right.
You get to the campsite.
Yeah. What is the point of being on the water if not to get to the campsite?
Right. You know? But then like our good buddy who was with us, who had like organized the event, like if you could imagine, he was the type of person who would like reach forward, do a paddle stroke, and then like as he pulled back, he would like take in like a new piece of nature before he would like do another paddle stroke.
Right.
Like it would be like, man, that bird right now.
Yeah.
Just truly, truly beautiful.
Dude, we did see an eagle on this trip. I don't know if you remember that.
That was insane. You mean the gigantic eagle that came swooping through the canyon we were in the middle of?
Yeah, it was while we were doing the rock jumping. So we're like at the bottom, like at the river, at this like giant canyon. And like John had like gone ahead to like scope where we could do the actual river crossing and get back on the trail. And like I turn around to like tell you and Mike that John is like waving us forward. And like from behind the corner where you and Mike are, this enormous bald eagle is just taken off. And it was like, oh my, it was like right above us. It looked like it was out of a postcard or a movie or something.
I mean, straight up, all of the conditions attached to like the circumstances that we saw it under. It was like, if you were a National Geographic like photographer, like the photo that goes in the calendar could have been taken from this moment.
Yeah. I mean, it was great. It's like, and it was like doing a show for us. It like flew over me and you and Mike, almost went down to exactly where John was standing, turned around, flew back to you and me and John and Mike, and then like went off hunting or something. It was like, oh my gosh, what was that?
It was really cool.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Like it's so weird because like you see, like when you're outside, you see like big birds frequently.
Sure.
But it's like, eagles have such like a majesty associated with them because of their like symbol of America. And it's like, when you see one in real life, like in the wild, it is pretty epic feeling.
No, that's the thing. Yeah. It's like there's sort of like those common associations, like, you know, like with like the eagle as like a symbol and everything. But I agree with you. It's like when you see it in action, in actuality, it's like, there's no two ways about it. That was sweet.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That thing just swooped.
That just, whew, man, right there, right above us, man. So cool. I don't know if you guys have ever seen an eagle. Please tell us your story.
There you go. Yeah.
Always fun.
In the meantime, though, I feel like we've talked a lot about the pending hike. I know that we have a lot more stories about the hike that we could absolutely tell. However, Jay and I are going to be doing the live episode of The Pop at GoFest here in Roanoke, Virginia on October 15th at 2 p.m. So it is a completely free to attend event. Carlin Brothers Coffee will actually have a booth at the event. So if you'd like to come and get some freshly brewed Carlin Brothers coffee or other merch while you're there, that would certainly be available. We'll also be just doing like a free to attend meet and greet after our speaking engagement. So if you would like to come and check that out, it's going to be in Roanoke, Virginia on October 15th. We go live at 2 p.m. at GoFest. We will have all of the information about the event in today's show notes. So be sure to check that out. And if you do attend, you will hear more about our exciting hike.
Also, just for clarity, when Ben says it's a free event, it is free to get into GoFest, and then it is free to come watch us.
Yes.
Yes, there is no paywall anywhere at all.
Yes. Yeah. So there's it's not ticketed in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. I have absolutely no idea what to expect in terms of like turnout. This is the only thing about it, is that like whenever we've done like meetups in the past, we have just like known.
Yeah, we've like sold tickets.
And there was like a known limit, like the theater would eventually be full, and therefore like you couldn't buy any more tickets.
That's it.
Yeah, so like we would know the exact number. So anyway, we'll be there. We hope to see you there, and we're going to be talking more about this hike and other things too.
Yeah, and also if you want to see like if other little kernels are there and you all like want to meet up together, there is actually the we have not had anything to do with it, but other little kernels have formed like a little Discord server just for people who are coming to GoFest so that they can coordinate, I guess, meeting up with one another or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So if you want to do that, we'll put a link to that Discord server in the show notes for today's episode as well.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Otherwise, transition?
Transition!
Okay, Jay. Can I tell you about my new, my wick of the peak, if you will?
Please do, Ben.
Okay, so this one, I think it's just interesting because I think that there's like kind of layers to it. One of the things that I've brought up on the show before is that Alice and I have been watching through the TV show Love Island.
Yeah.
The UK version.
Yeah.
Which has been just honestly like a complete hoot and holler and good time. And I have been very impressed with just like the quality of the production itself. Like it's very interesting and we've super enjoyed it. But that's not really the wick of the peak itself. It's sort of goes a little bit deeper into like, I think the reason like why I actually like reality TV.
Okay.
Which I think is maybe interesting. I mean, for one, it's like one of the conversations I always have with people about this particular thing. Because a lot of times I'll either tell people that like I watch these things and they'll be like, oh my gosh, me too. It's the best. And then the other people will be like, oh no.
Why would you?
And I'm like, okay. Here's the test is basically like if you have, you know, your significant other, you know, or something, and they are watching it in like the living room, I dare you just to walk through the living room.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you can walk through and not like just immediately be like, wait a second, who was that? And they said, what? I can't believe it.
I know.
That's ridiculous.
This is always how it goes. Like, even if you walk through and you're just like, oh my God, this is so stupid. Why is that person doing that? And it's like, you think you're being judgmental and you think you're being above it, but you've already been sucked in.
It's like,
that's
what everyone's doing.
That's what everyone thinks,
like,
man.
Yeah, everybody thinks they're above it. But so one of the things that I think that I have discovered about myself, about why I like to watch these things, is that it's almost like social situations turned up to like 11.
Yeah.
So like a lot of times it helps me to identify like how conflict can arise like between two people, or it's almost like there's like these like tropes associated with like social situations where it's like, you know, this does like this situation is obviously specific to this group of people and the weird circumstances associated with it. But it's like, but the reality of it is that like when two people like the same person and the way that their like insecurities manifest with one another and stuff, it's like you start to realize like that does happen out here in the real world.
Yeah.
This is an observable phenomenon. And I think because it's like such a caricature of reality, sometimes it makes it easier to start to like identify these situations and then like really take some time to spend with those situations and like maybe like pull some actual like wisdom or knowledge about how to interact in other ways.
Okay.
So like in a very unexpected and odd way, maybe like I tend to feel like there's actually something to be like learned from these reality TV shows.
Okay, so like what have you learned thus far watching Love Island UK edition?
Okay, so my latest observation is I've titled this observation just everything you do is wrong.
Okay.
But basically it comes down to this circumstance where it's like you are in a social dilemma where it has devolved into a no-win situation.
Okay.
So frequently, the example I would give from Love Island basically is that, like, in case you're unaware with the premise of the show, on the most basic version of it, it's like you've got a whole bunch of people that are like living in this villa together. So it could be like six guys and seven girls or whatever the case may be. But then, like, as the season progresses, new people enter and you have to be like coupled up
with
somebody. So almost inevitably, like whenever somebody new enters, it means that the only way for them to like to stay is for them to like make a connection with somebody and pretty much just break up what has otherwise been a previously formed relationship.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's like, if you enter, it's like, that is your objective. Like in order to play the game, it means you're going to go and take the person. You're going to disrupt a couple in some capacity.
Right.
And what I have observed about this is that like this is like the rules of engagement. This is like the rules of war when it comes to how the premise of all of this works. And yet it also ends up being the case that like whenever someone does it, I always find that the people who like are on the negative end of the circumstance,
yeah,
will sort of start like submitting beliefs or like notions that I just would disagree with on the whole. So an example might be like, let's say new guy enters, goes and talks to this girl who's coupled up with this guy, and that guy might, who has like the girl taken from him or whatever, be like, you know, it wouldn't have been a problem if he had just come over and talked to me about it first. Like, that's why I'm upset. I'm upset because he didn't come over and talk to me about it before he did it. And if he had done that, like, if he had just come and talked to me, we wouldn't even be here right now. I wouldn't even be upset. And it's like, you have gotten so, like, this person is like, what they're really upset about is the fact that like their circumstance got disrupted. Like,
yeah,
their situation was the one where like the detonation occurred.
Right.
And so, but it's like, there are circumstances, cause you know, I've watched a couple of seasons of it now and you've seen so many people come through. And I even think because of the way that, people who on the show have watched the show and like, as it gets further into the seasons, protocols have like kind of carried over from season to season.
Right, like the unspoken rules are there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, now it is absolutely the case that like when people come in, they're like, hey, I really like this girl. It's like, but they're talking to this guy. So it's like, hey, I just wanted to let you know, like, I'm here. The person I've had my eye on is this person. I'm going to go and try to like, you know, tell them that I am interested. And it's like, they've gotten like really good about following the rules. But then as a result, what ends up happening is that like, inside of that conversation, it's like, well, it was the way he said it, you know, it was like,
yeah,
you
know, right. like, oh yeah, yeah. So now they do come over and talk to him, but it's like, oh, well, he just wasn't respecting me as he spoke to me.
And yes. Right, yeah. It was the tone of voice, you know, or it was the like dismissal of whatever.
And
or,
it's like, the truth is it's none of that. Yeah.
The truth. But that's the thing. It's like, this is why I call it the, like, everything you do is wrong. It's like, it literally doesn't matter how perfectly they go about it. It's sort of like all of it will always be wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like, I sometimes feel like this would be like the idea, or maybe like a more relatable potential example could be like running into an ex out into the wild or something like that. And it's like, you pretty much have like, let's say you like you're passing each other on the street, or you're both at the same restaurant, or, you know, find yourself in the same like social situation, like invited to a party or something like that. It's like, one of them, one example could be like going up to this person and being like, hey, how are you? Like, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Like, all right, take care. See you. Like, see you next time. The other is just ignore it completely. Say absolutely nothing to them. The person who is on the receiving end of that will then walk away and go and tell their friends one of two things. One of them is like, completely ignored me as if I didn't even exist and we didn't date for the past blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah. Wrong. Or it would be like, comes up to me and says, hey, how's it going? Like, he didn't just break up with me 3 months ago.
Right. Yeah. You know? Right. It's like,
it's like, do you want me to like say nothing? Do you want me to come up and talk to you? Like, it's like
well, yeah, they just want you to be the villain.
It's like what their takeaway is. I had a gut punch because I ran into somebody I didn't want to run into and I want to tell you about it.
Right.
And no matter what they did is wrong.
Right.
And so this is an interesting one for me because I feel like as I've talked about on just so many occasions at this point, classic people pleaser, which means that like, if there's someone who I have like this like negative something with, it's kind of like, it's like my brain will be like on overdrive trying to figure out like conflict resolution. It's like, how can I fix it? Or like, what can I say? Like, what can I do? And it's like, no matter what I do, it will be wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what, it will be like in poor taste. It will be like the wrong decision and it will be like too soon. It will be too late. Like,
yeah,
it's like, there's no correct way to handle this situation. It's just unfortunate. You just got to sort of like understand that the person who was on the negative end of the thing is probably just not going to be pleased.
Yeah. They just don't like you.
I know. But like, that's helpful for me to realize.
Okay, I see.
Like,
yeah.
So this is like the aha moment of it all.
Right. Like, it's like there's no use in going home and worrying about like how upset you made this person, because the fact is there is nothing you could have done that would have made them happy.
Right. Right. And so for me, what's helpful there though is that like I would say I'm actually somewhat okay, or I would feel reasonably confident in my ability to react to situations where I absolutely know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there's nothing I can do to change it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this thing happened, the vase broke, there is no fixing it. You know,
yeah.
Like, and it's kind of like, I can be at peace with things that can't be changed. The things that cause me struggle are like, can I fix this? It's like, should I get some glue? Should I be like gluing the thing back together? Like,
right.
Is that even possible? And maybe that's a bad example. Maybe it's like, if the vase has been like shattered,
yeah,
I'll still think like, I can maybe fix it. I could probably glue it back together.
Yeah.
If it was turned into literal sand,
yeah,
it's like, no, I can't fix that one.
Nope.
And therefore won't dwell on it.
Right.
And so anyway, that's basically, my piece of sort of, reality TV wisdom observation applied to life psychology.
Right. Just don't worry about it.
I know.
Yeah.
Just don't worry about
just
it.
Just don't worry about it. Man, on the flip side of things, my Wick of the Peak is just going to be the American version of the show, which just started back last night, which is Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh, man. Bip.
Oh, yeah. Bip. Oh, my gosh. I think what's fascinating about this show, it's so funny to listen to you talk about like Love Island, which Bachelor in Paradise is almost just a straight rip off of.
Yeah.
Just like, you have to be coupled off or you're out. Like, you must find love or you are off this island. Do you understand me?
Right. Yeah. It's like, also be genuine.
Also, just be genuine. It's so interesting, though, hear you talk about, like, oh, yeah, there's all these rules that have happened, and, like, now people know, like, because, so, the season started last night, and sure enough, like, the last time they had Bachelor in Paradise, there was all this drama around, like, these people were talking about, they were talking to each other before they came here, and, like, they were exchanging texts, and they've already hooked up, and they're just holding out for this person to get here, and whatever.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
It's like,
yeah,
there's
right.
All this, like, oh, and they didn't tell any, it's like, it's a lot of the same stuff, like, if they just told, like, I didn't know that they were waiting for this person, because if they had, I wouldn't have pursued them. And it is like, you can see people coming down to the beaches here, and it's like, guess what, all the rules from that are like, everyone's very aware of the rules now. They're just like, they'll come down and be like, I've been talking to this person ahead of time, we've been texting, I'm waiting for them to get here, or like, you know, like,
oh, no,
everyone's
way
very open about like, yeah, I sort of been talking to this person out here, I think she's gonna be here, I hope to see her, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
so that's been pretty interesting.
That is like one of the, like, I think an interesting aspect of this particular show is that, like, because they're all coming from a pool of former Bachelor contestants, and because like there is such a thing as, you know, air quotes, Bachelor Nation, it's kind of like, I think that they're so like, the web doesn't mean that all of the people have everybody else's number, but I would be willing to bet that anybody from any season has someone else on their season who has the other person's number to where like there's like enough interconnectedness that
like if you want to, you could probably get someone's number.
Right. And, and I think behind closed doors, it's like by the time they all get there, whether this is the type of thing that like they all flew in on the same flight, whether or not they're just literally told who else is going to be there, like whether or not like they've all broken their NDAs with one another and just told each other who's going to be there.
Right.
It's like they all know who to expect, and because they know who to expect, and because this like network of people has so much connectedness anyway, it's not even surprising to me that like by the time they get there, that it's like, oh yeah, like those two people are definitely like,
right,
you know, they're already on the same page, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's like the big difference between the Americanized Bachelor in Paradise version of it and then like the Love Island version of it, where it's like you're just literally talking about someone who is coming into the show who happens to live in England.
Right.
You know, and
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, like like they're all just complete strangers going in.
Exactly. So it's like it's right. Incredibly rare for somebody to walk in the door and anybody to have any bearing on who they are whatsoever. Oh,
now that you've said that out loud, though, Ben, I just guarantee you that's going to start happening on that show. They're going to be like, oh my God, I went to school with that person.
Well, I will say that the season we're watching right now, there has been one instance of that exact thing.
Yeah, like, oh my God, I went on a date with that person 4 years ago. Like, that's like, the more savvy the producers get, the more like drama like that they'll introduce into the show.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. For sure. What's interesting to me about Bachelor in Paradise is I think it is the world's greatest example of, because it is effectively the sideshow to Bachelor and Bachelorette.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these are all the people who weren't good enough to be the Bachelor or the Bachelorette. They all got, like, they didn't, quote unquote, win. They didn't make it to the very finals. They made it far enough. Or they were, like, had the most fan reaction to them on the actual show.
Right.
But it is
for better or worse.
For better or worse, often worse. Like there is one guy on the show named Michael. He is like, he was, I think from like two seasons ago, everybody loved him, and he eventually, I think he made it to like the final four, and eventually he like pulled himself from the show because he had this like heart-wrenching phone call with his son, which they put on the show, and he was just like, when are you coming home? Like, I'm, you know, he's like, so he just like, he missed him so much, he had to leave, and it was just like, no, why'd you leave? So he's like one of the first people down on the beach this year, and immediately it's just like, you can just tell he's getting the edit where it's just like, everyone protect this guy, he's the best guy.
Oh,
everyone likes it. Everyone else is here to party. He's like, you know, 38, he's older than everyone on the beach,
right?
But like, clearly just like the super nice sweet guy. I got my son, I'm looking for a wife, you know. But so then it's like they continuously like parade girl after girl down there, and you're like, dude, all of these girls are just here to party. Like, I'm gonna need them to bring in like a real quality actual human being to date this guy.
Oh, sure. Right? Like, yeah. Like, I just want him to find love.
Yeah, I'm like, look, I'm here for the drama, believe you me. but also, you brought Michael in, so now we're gonna have to do something about that.
I know. Yeah. Like, we have to take it seriously enough. Yeah, in order to
But it is, to me, it's such a fascinating show because it's like, it is the sideshow, but it is so much better than the actual show.
It is.
Yeah.
It's almost like what previously had happened is that like Bachelor, Bachelorette was like the big leagues.
Yeah.
And then like the farm league that sort of like formed like beside those.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, this is like minor leagues.
Right.
And now like, you know, like the idea could be like, maybe if like you're popular enough, like in Bachelor in Paradise, like we'll pull you up and you'll become like the next Bachelor or something like that. And I do think that now it is like the shape of like the feed system has changed, and it's almost like Bachelor and Bachelorette just feed into
Bachelor in Paradise.
The last
season of Bachelorette, they had two Bachelorettes. You could tell they were really trying to mix it up. Did not work. Like, most boring season I've ever watched.
I felt like I bailed on the show because of the structure of it, which was that like so they had the two Bachelorettes.
Yeah.
What were their names?
Gabby and Rachel.
Okay. Yeah. And so on the previous season, these two had like both like, you know, kind of come together in the face of like a really like bad and negative situation that they had been like on the receiving end of like or whatever. And I was, and they announced that they were going to be going and doing the Bachelorette Experience together. And I was like, the only way that this is okay is if they don't end up having the two girls competing with each other, because like part of what made everybody love them was like the way they were there for each other. And so I was like, so they can't be dating the same pool of guys, because that would be like a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because then I'll like, what's
then they
happen?
Just put the power right back in the guy's hands. Right,
exactly. Yeah. And it's like, now all of a sudden you've got like a guy who's on the show who like maybe the girl likes, but then he likes the other girl. And it's like, you can see the obvious problem that's going to form immediately. And I was like, so here's my thing. As long as they don't do that, I'm in. And then like promptly like night one, it's like, here's how it's going to work. And I was like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, this is just,
it was not a great setup. They didn't establish rules ahead of time. They were just like, anything goes, because that'll make crazy TV. But it was just like, it was so predictable how the season would go down. It's like, well, clearly like they're each going to both like one guy, and then one guy's only going to like one of them. And then one guy's going to be with one girl, and he's going to want to actually shift to the other side. And it's like, everything you thought was going to happen played out exactly the way you thought it was going to happen. And it was just like boring to watch in the meantime.
Yeah.
It was like, I'm really just watching this so that I'll have more of a
working knowledge
of the cast for Bachelor in Paradise.
There you go.
It's like it's weird that like that's true. And it's like, I, because like in the way they like ABC, this must be like ABC's biggest moneymaker by far, is the Bachelor franchise or whatever, because like they effectively don't want you to like go for more than a week without having an interaction with the show,
right?
You know, like Bachelorette ended last week. This week, Bachelor in Paradise started.
It's just like,
you know, like they're like, boom. Not only that, it's two episodes a week.
Right.
You know, going forward, it's like, oh my gosh, it's so much. It's way too much of a commitment to watch this show, but also it's crazy and I can't look away.
That's the thing.
It is so, I don't know.
I have a very serious question to ask you.
Okay.
Do you think in the history of podcasts, and keeping in mind there have probably been millions and millions of episodes of podcasts made, do you think we are the first one that has ever spent the first half hour talking about nothing but like aggressive outdoor backpacking?
Yeah.
And then promptly transitioned into aggressive breakdown of reality TV dating shows.
No, I don't think it's ever happened before.
I was gonna say this is a first. We are on like the freshest ground right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and mm-hmm. this is really like maybe this is like the new format, is like we go out backpacking and whilst fireside discuss our favorite reality TV shows.
Exactly.
Like with the sound of the crackling fire.
Right.
Like, you know,
little white noise back there for you.
Exactly. Just mm-hmm. it's calming, it's peaceful.
Yeah, you can hear the coyotes howling in the background.
Hey, you know what? We actually heard coyotes howling on our backpacking
I know
trip.
We did.
I'm laying there. So it was our first night. I'm exhausted. You know, like we've gone all day. My feet are killing me. I'm like, you know, sweating in my sleeping bag while also like freezing with a beanie on my head. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of just trying to settle in with some Name of the Wind playing right next to me on my phone.
Oh my gosh, that was so funny. Yeah.
When all of a sudden these coyotes, like maybe a half mile from us, start howling.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all I can do is laugh.
Yeah.
Because I'm like partially like actually scared, because I'm like, man, this is like some actual wildlife.
Right.
It sounds like they just caught or treed something. Like,
yeah.
You know, they're telling their friends, maybe
something
it's us.
Is the foot. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yo, there's like four tents over there. And you know, but like I'm also sitting there like, oh my gosh, fun fact about coyotes, we heard some.
We sure did.
It was, oh my gosh, and it was like, it was eerie and weird and awesome.
Yeah, it was. And it was like, it was comically timed. The moment the four of us got in our tents, they started like howling, and it was like this weird like overlapping, I don't even know how they would make the sound kind of howl.
It was almost like they were like triangulating from like a distance from like one another, and
it was a strange sound. But then it obviously wasn't directed at us in any way, and our Name of the Wind listening, which was a very funny situation. Me and you and Mike talked about Name of the Wind aggressively while hiking.
Aggressively is the right word. Yeah.
Because the three of us drove down together, and I think Mike just finished it, and we're both listening to it at parts here. So we were just like discussing it all the way down. John has listened to The Name of the Wind, I think twice. All the way through both books. So good on him. But he has not engaged with it the way the three of us has. So he could keep up with what we were saying, sort of, but he didn't feel like he had a ton to contribute in the ways of what about this obscure detail thing over here?
Yeah, yeah. I think you could sort of see him glaze over every time we'd be and then Canis and who and what?
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, we've gone too deep. We've gone too deep.
But I think me and you and Mike, we're all just laying in our tents with our Audible apps open, just playing our downloaded copy of Name of the Wind from wherever we were at two volume. So you can sort of hear other people were listening to it, but not what the narrator was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So from John's perspective, we're all in our own tents. And so from John's perspective, he's literally listening to his three friends listen to the same book at different parts at different speeds.
Yeah.
At different volumes. Mm-hmm. And so this is how all of us were just going to sleep that night.
Going to sleep that night, man. It was The Name of the Wind.
It was really great.
Yep.
I feel like I came up with about probably another 15 Name of the Wind theories.
Dude, we got some good ones on the drive down.
You know what? We got some really solid stuff. If you are a Name of the Wind listener and you are want to find a way to partake in some quality Name of the Wind trivia, it is worth mentioning that Jay and I, if you're familiar with the Super Carlin Brothers trivia nights that we do every other month on the Super Carlin Brothers channel, the months in between those months, we also do fandom trivia just for patrons and Discord, where we can kind of delve into Harry Potter only, or actually as of the day that this episode will go live, we'll be doing Disney only trivia. And in a couple of months, we're going to be doing Name of the Wind only trivia.
Yeah. So in November for Discord only.
Yeah. Right? For Discord only. So
Name of the Windvember.
Name of the Windvember. So if you are interested in participating in that, you want to head on over to Patreon at the $5 tier, you will gain Discord access. And with that Discord access, you will then have all of the necessary prompts and information in order to come and participate in that particular event. We also just do lots of other really cool things through the Discord, including some of the various, step competitions. We will frequently send over bits of information about which thumbnails to use for a particular video, or lots of cool stuff.
Yeah,
always going on inside of there. So,
well, in fact, even just after, if you are listening or watching the live premiere of this show on YouTube right now, if you're listening to this in real time, then actually today, as soon as this is over, we're going to be doing a live Q&A with patrons right here from the set. Over on Patreon.
And that's another one that you gain with at any level on Patreon. Every other month we do a live Q&A with Ben and Jay, where you can submit questions and we will answer them. And it kind of ends up just sort of forming into its own very unique and interactive episode, if you will.
Yeah.
Because we're sort of seeing the questions pop up in real time. There's a chat feature. So if you just have a question that kind of comes up in response to something we say, it's a great way to ask a question there. Again, all of this is available over at patreon.com/popcornculture. Recommend you check that out. But otherwise, until next time,
pop, pop.